Have you ever experienced in your life burnout? Have you ever experienced burnout? Or maybe not burnout, but you just feel pretty close to burnt out, perhaps. Have you ever been in a spot in your life where you're just traveling along and you're just over it? You're just over it. I mean, all of us can go through that. It could be because you're doing the same thing for so long that it just wears us down. Or it could be some traumatic event happens in our life, or just, who knows, a thousand things. I could try to speculate all the ways we can experience the feeling of being burned out. And it could be our profession. It could be the grind of life. It could be relationally driven. I can't pinpoint everyone's exact emotions on this, but I'm sure you can relate. Let me just be personal for a minute. In my profession, pastors historically struggle on Sundays and Mondays because everything about my job points to Sunday morning. Everything about the job I do, you know, the message and the preparation, and I tend to run through it several times during the week, and so by the time I get up here, I've said these words too many times. And, you know, you deliver this public address with people staring and listening and trying to be helpful and useful in their lives. And so afterwards, Sunday could be an aftermath. And not just because of the message, although that's the heaviest part, but all the things, everything that goes on in the church. When we were first pastoring 25 years ago, early stages, you're doing everything yourself, or your family's doing everything themselves. Your wife's doing too much herself. You know, you're just working so hard. And then, as time goes on, you get more helpers, and you learn to let go and not micromanage everybody. But at the same time, you know, everything still comes back to square one as far as if it doesn't go well. So, you know, Sunday is like the climactic moment of a week of work. And more than just a week, but that week especially going into that Sunday. So while we come together and celebrate a brand new week starting, beginning with God, beginning with faith as you enter the new week, I'm entering the peak, the climactic moment of the week for me. And then the rest of that day and the next day, I got to just get into the grind for the following one coming just 7 days later. So it's usually an adrenaline letdown. Now, I've been doing this for so long that it doesn't affect me very often anymore. But early days and early years, and even still sometimes, you just find yourself physically exhausted, emotionally spent. It could be Sunday afternoon. It could be Monday. It just kind of has a wear. People who public speak occasionally are always surprised at the after effects of doing that, and it's no complaint. We all have things in life. I got a charmed existence. I'm just saying that's one of the areas where I'm vulnerable in my own journey. And then there's always the big days. I mean, big days are even harder because you build like Easter. You get ready for a big day, and then sometimes the week after a big event like last week, you're just like, who am I and why am I here? When it just all has been built up to a moment. I'm saying that, and not to mention personal crises we all experience. I've been doing this 25 years plus now. In the first dozen years, we're just, you know, young Arlen grinding. And then at some point, you get older and you start realizing, you know, things happen. I've had twice in the last dozen or so years where I had probably needed counseling because of just things that happened in life and professionally, personally. And but you just got to keep going. So we've all been there. We've all been burned out, or just over it at some point probably, or you will be. If you're young and that's a new sensation to you, welcome to the world, welcome to the party. But anyhow, this is you have your own story, right? It could be just doing the same thing over and over. You know, maybe you're type A or maybe you're not, but you're just working, and then just something happens, just the weirdest thing, something said, it's something you hear, a song you hear, a movie scene you see, something someone says off the cuff, someone who hurts your feelings, something that just pops into your head that just pushes you out of yourself enough to look at everything and say, what in the world am I doing? And what's it all about? Or it could be you're looking forward to a big moment. You're preparing for this business you're starting to take off, or this promotion you're working towards, or this financial goal you're achieving, or this trip you're planning for. And then you get there, and either it's just disappointing, but it's either because you find that the joy was in the journey more than the accomplishment, or the accomplishment didn't work and you're disappointed, or it worked but it wasn't as fulfilling as you thought it would be, or you just wonder what's next. And so there's all these things that can pour into just burnout. And if you're there or have been there, you're not alone. And I say all of that in a weird way to say I can't pinpoint your story today exactly, but trust me, against all the demons in your head that will tell you otherwise, you are not alone in those moments. And people have been there before, or are there now, or will be. And there's a path forward. Which brings us to our story today. We are continuing our series together on Sundays called Thrones. Thrones is the part, we've been taking a journey, if you're new with us today, we've been taking a journey through the Bible starting back in last year in the beginning, the Old Testament or the Hebrew story, Hebrew scriptures. We've made it into the era of Israel where they had kings and a kingdom and a throne, and the kingdom was divided into two irreparably. And the northern kingdom, which is now called Israel, and the southern kingdom, which is now called Judah, are at odds. And we've been studying this period, and we're calling this little short series Thrones to cover this era of history. And we saw that up north in the northern kingdom, they didn't have one good king, starting with the first one, Jeroboam, who just led the nation away from their faith in God. It got worse and worse until seven kings later, a man named Ahab came to the throne. And Ahab was the worst of the lot. He married a woman named Jezebel, who was the daughter of another king from another country, and she brought with her their religion of Baal worship and Asherah worship, which was very vulgar, idolatrous practices that we've discussed before, and they brought that into Israel. And so not only was the nation being pulled away from their faith, but they were led into some very nasty religious practices in place of them. And it was a very dark time in Israel at that time. But when things were the darkest, we saw a couple weeks ago before Easter that God raises up the brightest lights. Maybe the light shines brighter than it otherwise would because it's so dark, or maybe special light is needed when it's darkest in general. But God raised up a prophet named Elijah, and Elijah is epic. We saw the famous story of Elijah before Easter, didn't we? It's a story of him coming in and telling the king of Israel, there will be no rain falling on the ground, there will be a drought for a few years, says the Lord, which is a pretty gutsy call to make. And that's the first time everyone met Elijah. He was already doing God's work. He was already a prophet. He just wasn't that famous. But in that moment, all the years Elijah, who's not young anymore, all those years that Elijah's been serving God, it comes to a moment where he tells the king, a drought is coming that's going to cause a famine, that's going to cause an economic downturn, that's going to get your attention, so you'll realize that God is there and wants the people back. He wants the kingdom to come back to him. And then Elijah disappears. He leaves the country for those few years. And he takes care of a widow woman who also takes care of him in a different country. Has a whole thing going on there. And when it's time, God brings him back to confront King Ahab. But Ahab's trying to kill him. Ahab's been hunting him down, killing all the prophets of God along the way he could, which was not unusual for him. But now he's really trying to kill all the prophets of God because of what Elijah has proclaimed and has come true. So as Elijah shows back up, he is public enemy number one. He gets the people and the king and all the prophets of Baal and that worship practice there to meet him on Mount Carmel. And he says, look, you guys want to kill me, I get it. But before you do, well, I hope God's got your attention. Let's have a little showdown and see whose God is real. If I'm a phony, then you're going to kill me anyhow. But if I can prove that God is real, then you can die. How about those odds? And the people were like, yeah, and they had no choice. And so before it's over, Elijah prays down fire from heaven to consume a sacrifice that was dripping wet. We saw the whole story 2 weeks ago. The people are so astonished to see this fire from heaven that they say, the Lord, he is God. The Lord is God. They worship God. For the first time in all these generations, they fall back into their faith. And then the people go back home, and the king, the prophets of Baal are executed. And the king, King Ahab, is there, left alone. And Elijah says, head home quickly, head back to Jezreel, because a rainstorm is finally coming in, and boy, is it needed. And he prays, and a mighty wind rolls in, blowing in the storm that was so desperately needed. And we saw the story end 2 weeks ago, if you were here, just that's all review. 1 Kings 18:46, the story ended by saying, the Lord gave special strength to Elijah. He tucked his cloak into his belt and he ran ahead of Ahab's chariots all the way to the entrance of Jezreel. He outruns the chariot race. He's pumped. God's power, probably adrenaline. Can you imagine how Elijah must have felt in this moment? I mean, all these years of serving the Lord to this epic multi-year event of a drought and a prophecy and coming back and confronting the enemy, 450 against one, winning the day, fire from God falling, mighty storm rolling in through the wind and rain falling again, people all falling on their face for the first time in who knows how long, saying, we believe in God. Yes, the Lord is God. I mean, it's Revival City. And on top of all of that, no doubt Elijah, running back in full adrenaline, must have thought, not only will the people come back to God through what I've done, through what God has done with me, but no doubt the king himself will believe. You ever do something where you think, I want to help people, but boy, how cool would it be to help a big fish? Like, imagine if you could help the leader of your nation or your state or some celebrity or something, and you could make a difference in someone's life that's that epic. I mean, he goes back and all the people are believing now, and certainly Ahab's going to say, wow, I see the light. So Elijah's so excited, he doesn't run out of the country like before. He goes back to the city to greet the king as he arrives and celebrate the revival of God's power. It has a climactic moment in his journey, and it's the famous story we all know about Elijah. And that's where we pick up today. So today we're looking at chapter 19. If you want to follow along, the verses are also on the screen. 1 Kings 19, beginning with verse 1. When Ahab got home, when the king got home, he told his wife Jezebel everything that Elijah had done, including the way he had killed all the prophets of Baal. So Jezebel sent this message to Elijah: may the gods strike me and even kill me if by this time tomorrow I have not killed you, just as you killed them. What? That is not the outcome I think Elijah was expecting, or at least hoping for. She says, on my life, you're dead by tomorrow. I mean, I can imagine the confusion of him saying, did she not hear what God, has she not seen the drought the last few years? Has she not seen, did she not just hear the story of God's power, of all the people coming around? Why would they not say, why would her and Ahab not believe? And even if they don't believe, why would they not at least respect it? Respect it, right? But here she is saying, on my life, I'm going to kill you now. It is perplexing. And you'd think that Elijah's like, okay, pull the sleeves up. Round two, here we go. Time to show Jezebel what we showed Ahab. Time to show them God's power all over again. But that's not Elijah's reaction. Elijah is so stunned. He's so thrown off his game. He does something that doesn't seem very Elijah-ish. That's a new word I just made up. It says in verse number 3, Elijah was afraid and fled for his life. Why would he be afraid? It makes no sense. I mean, isn't God just done some amazing things? I mean, even the story of him in the other country with the widow that he was helping, God has been powerful. Why would he be afraid? It makes no sense. But you know what happens when we're exhausted? When we're exhausted, fear sets in and things seem outsized. When we're exhausted, our problems tend to seem bigger, don't they? And he's exhausted, so he runs. In fact, it says that he went to Beersheba, a town in Judah, and he left his servant there. Folks, he goes out of the country. He leaves the whole country up north, heads to the southern kingdom where Ahab and Jezebel can't reach him, takes his servant. We met his servant, by the way, 2 weeks ago, briefly. You may not even noticed he was there, but he was helping Elijah in all of this. He takes his servant down to the southern kingdom where it's safe, leaves the servant in a town called Beersheba and says, toodles, and leaves. And you're like, what? The guy's like, what am I supposed to do here? I don't know. Figure it out. I'm out of here. He leaves him there and goes on his way. In fact, it says next that he went on alone into the wilderness, traveling all day. He sat down under a solitary broom tree and prayed that he might die. Here's what he's done. And listen, relatable? Elijah isolates himself right now. He leaves his servant behind. He comes to a spot and he just says, let me die. That's it for me. And he's finished. Then he actually prays a prayer. Here's what he says. I have had enough, Lord. Take my life, for I am no better than my ancestors who have already died. here's what he's saying, if you can read between the lines a little. He's saying, I thought I was somebody. I thought God had a special calling for my life. I thought I had purpose. I was told God's got a special calling for you. I was somebody going to make a difference in this world. And now I realize that I've lived long enough to see, am I really making a difference? Does it really matter? What does it even mean anyhow? I'm no better than anyone who's been forgotten before me. Just let me die. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm not going to do that to anybody. But God, if you just take my life, I'd be grateful, because I don't want to live anymore. Wow. This is Elijah, folks. Listen, in churches sometimes they sing songs about Elijah still. These are the days of Elijah. When they sing the song, These Are the Days of Elijah, they're not singing about these days, just for the record. Like, these are the days of Elijah right here. He's like, I just want to be dead. What's the point? My life isn't, I wasn't special. I didn't have a purpose in it. It doesn't make a difference. What have I done anyhow? He's isolated. He's alone. It says in verse 5, then he lay down and he slept under the broom tree. He just goes to bed. And it says in the next part of the verse, but as he was sleeping, an angel touched him and told him, hey, you're not you when you're hungry. Grab a Snickers. That's not exactly what it says. And that may be in the Message translation, I think, but not in this one. But no, the verse says, but as he was sleeping, an angel touched him and told him, get up and eat. So kind of did say that, didn't he? Get up and eat. Like, hey, buddy, wake up. Here's some food for you. And sure enough, it says that he looked around him, and there beside his head was some bread baked on hot stones and a jar of water. By the way, how cool is it when you go to bed, when you're having a bad day, to wake up and there's an angel, hey, I made you some lunch. Sure enough, there's some food right there for him. That's a nice touch. So what does he do? Does he get up and say, all right, I feel recharged. Let's go tackle the world, right? That's all I needed. No, but it says this, that he sat, he ate, and he drank, and he laid down again. You've been in a spot in your life where you're like, I'm going to lay down, I'm going to stay down, I'm going to get up to use the restroom and get some food when I have to, and I'm going to go lay down again. I mean, he was done, man. He was done. And God's going to step in here and say, okay, we need some special attention. Elijah needs some special, special focus here. He's in a dark spot. So it says, verse number 7, the angel of the Lord came again and touched him and said, get up and eat some more, or the journey ahead will be too much for you. In other words, I'm about to take you on a trip, buddy. You need to get away. You need to get away for a little while. We're going to take you on a little trip, and you're going to need to eat some food and get going, because you need to get away. So sure enough, he got up and ate and drank, and the food gave him enough strength to travel for 40 days and 40 nights. That's some food right there, by the way. That's goulash or something, I don't know. For 4 days and 40 nights, all the way to Mount Sinai, the mountain of God. Now, this is pretty cool. He gets all the way, God takes him on a 40-day one-way trip. He's like, you know what you need, Elijah? You need a sabbatical. You need a vacation. We're going to take you away. And on a 40-day one-way trip, he goes to a very important place that's referred to as the Mountain of God. Mount Sinai. Why is it called the Mountain of God? Mount Sinai is a famous place in Israel's history. If you remember, if you've been around to hear the stories or read the stories before, this was the place that Moses, interestingly, when Moses was a young man, he was going to be a hero in Egypt, and that fell flat, and he ran for his life. He ended up raising a family and being a shepherd in the wilderness, and it was at the base of Mount Sinai that God came to Moses and said, Moses, go back to Egypt and lead the people out of slavery. I don't want to. Well, go anyhow. So this is Mount Sinai. Now, once Moses went back and brought the people out of slavery, as they're all heading as a big, huge group through the wilderness, it was at Mount Sinai that God gave them the laws to govern the new nation. Remember, the people were in slavery before. They didn't have laws for themselves. They didn't have to govern themselves. They just did what they were told. So God gives a whole system of laws for a new nation. And Moses goes up into Mount Sinai to meet the Lord, to get the Ten Commandments are there, and a whole bunch more than 10 were given. In fact, Mount Sinai was so powerful, the people gathered at the mountain and they saw clouds, they saw thunder and lightning and powerful wind. They saw a fire burning up the mountain. People were terrified, like, God's up there. I ain't going up there. But Moses went there and met with God several times. Several things happened. We studied all of that last year. At some point, he was so close to the presence of God that as much as a human can be, it says that he saw God face to face, like a person would speak to their friend. He was up in the mountain. This is Mount Sinai. This is the mountain of God. In other words, this is a place of spiritual significance to this nation. And now they're in the promised land. He takes them all the way out of Israel back to the wilderness, to Mount Sinai. He says, Elijah, I want you to meet me someplace that is spiritually important to you and to your nation. 40-day trip one way. There in verse 9, Elijah came to a cave where he spent the night. He just goes back in, and he does, okay, I'm here, I'm going to bed. It's a long trip, you know. But the Lord said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? What am I doing here? What do you mean, what am I doing here? You told me to come here. No. God's not asking, what are you doing here in this cave? He's saying, how did you end up here? Like, what's going on with you, man? What's happened in your life that has brought you to a spot where we have arrived? What's going on in here? What are you doing here, Elijah? And Elijah, it's been like, what, I don't know, a month and a half or so since the whole glory day on top of Mount Carmel. And Elijah has been in a dark place ever since Jezreel. Here, the mighty Elijah has been bottling it up and bottling it up. When God asks him, what are you doing here? Oh, does he open up the floodgates and let God know? He says, I have zealously served the Lord God Almighty, but the people of Israel have broken their covenant with you. They've torn down your altars. They've killed every one of your prophets, and I'm the only one left. And they're trying to kill me too. He's done. By the way, notice the things he says in there. They're not true. He's like, they've killed every one of your prophets, and I'm the only one left. That wasn't true, and the thing is, he knew it wasn't true. We kind of skipped over this detail a couple weeks ago, but when Elijah first came back from being gone to have that confrontation on Mount Carmel, one of the King Ahab's administrators had told Elijah that though the king was killing the prophets of God, they had been secretly hiding the prophets in caves and other places and sneaking food to them to keep them alive, that many were still alive. And Elijah seemed to lose that fact right now. He's like, nope, they're all dead. I'm the only one left. See, listen, this is what happens to us if we're not careful, and maybe you've been there, maybe you're there right now. It's a dangerous spot in our lives when we begin to think that we're all alone, that we isolate ourselves and to say, no one understands me, no one gets me, no one understands what I'm going through. No one's ever had to walk through what I'm... Maybe they've walked through something similar, but mine's different. I'm an exception, or I'm going through a tough time. It's easy to do. We all do it. We convince ourselves when we're in a dark place that no one can understand, no one cares, or no one knows. That anything that you would give people advice to get out of that situation works for other people, but my situation is different. And no one understands what I'm going through right now alone. It's a dangerous spot to find yourself in. And Elijah has convinced himself. He's isolated. He left his servant in a different city. And he's convinced himself he's alone. And so God is going to speak to him in verse number 11. God says, go out and stand before me on the mountain, the Lord told him. And as Elijah stood there, the Lord passed by. Now, this is interesting. This is interesting because God says, hey, Elijah, I want you to leave the cave and go out into the mountain. I want you to talk to me. I'm going to be there. But Elijah doesn't move. It says he just stood there. He's like, oh, okay. He's waiting. And sure enough, it says the Lord passed by. So the Lord is there. Elijah hasn't stepped out to meet him yet. But the Lord is out there passing by, and he's called Elijah to join him. And notice as the Lord passed by, notice what's happening in the rest of the verse. It says a mighty windstorm hit the mountain. It was such a terrible blast that the rocks were torn loose. But the Lord was not in the wind. And I don't know about you, but I'd think the Lord was in the wind. If you get a big old wind, you know, get a big storm rolling in, and you're like, oh, God, I believe in you. It's powerful. Keep me safe. I've seen some of you in the church in the old days when the steeple would push real hard and the whole roof would crank during the wind, and you're all like, quit listening to me. You're like, speak, Lord. Your servant is listening, you know. I mean, the Lord is in the wind, right? But to Elijah who stood there and knew that God said, come meet me outside, and God was there, but when he heard the big wind, he's like, I don't think he's there. I don't think I need to see him in this windstorm. It says, after the wind, there was an earthquake, but the Lord was not in the earthquake. He's like, no, not there either. After the earthquake, there was a fire, but the Lord was not in the fire. Now, that's pretty dramatic, by the way. If you're on a mountaintop, I mean, a big wind might be explainable. An earthquake, that happens. Ask New Jersey this week. I think that stuff happens. But a fire in the middle of a mountaintop, that's pretty dramatic. But he's like, no, I don't see the Lord there. Check it out. After the fire, there was the sound of a gentle whisper. Just a still, small voice. It's interesting. It says this. When Elijah heard it, when Elijah heard that gentle whisper, when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, and he went out, and he stood at the entrance of the cave. Isn't that interesting? I mean, he's in the cave, and God says, okay, Elijah, what are you doing? I'm here because I'm the only one left. Okay, Elijah, come out and talk to me. Powerful wind, doesn't budge. Earthquake, fire. God's like, here I am, doesn't budge. But then past all the hoopla, a gentle whisper. And Elijah says, there I go. And he steps out. That's powerful. And you might be looking at that saying, why? Why did Elijah wait? Why didn't Elijah go out earlier when the other sensational signs were going on, when God was there waiting for him? And here's the simple explanation I could give you, is that Elijah had experienced the sensational. He needed the personal. Elijah had already experienced all the sensational in his life. He's like, ooh, fire, you say? Big deal. I just saw fire from God fall down on Mount Carmel and consume a whole sacrifice. I've been there. Wind? I watched a guy push a whole rainstorm into end a drought. All the big, fancy, splashy signs of God's power, I have seen them, and they've impressed me in the past. But right now, I mean, I've watched others get awed by God's power in the big, sensational ways, and I've been a part of all of that. I've been there, I've done that, and I bought the T-shirt. But Elijah didn't need the sensational. He needed the personal. He'd been to the show. He needed to know there was something a little more grounded and real in this moment. And when he heard the whisper, the gentle whisper, he stepped out. What does God say to him? It's interesting. What does God say? Verse 13, the voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? That's the gentle whisper. What are you doing here, Elijah? The crazy part is, God already asked that question earlier. It's the same, he just repeated himself. You ever have someone come to you, but this is smart. Ever have someone say to you, hey, what's wrong? Well, I'll tell you what's wrong, la, 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 la. Mm-hmm. Okay, hey, what's wrong? Hey, what's going on? Well, let me tell you what's going on. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, hey, what's going on? Right? Elijah, what are you doing here? I'll tell you what I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. Come on here. Come on now. He's bringing the tone down. It's interesting, isn't it, how that God's whispering, that gentle whisper. You know why that's so important? You know why that's so powerful? Do you know why that was so powerful to Elijah in that moment? Simply for this reason, that God whispers because he's close. That Elijah has already heard all the noise. In fact, he's at Mount Sinai. Back when Moses was there in the day, the thunders and lightnings and all the power of God. And certainly, after all the failures in his own personal life, after all the letdowns he's experienced, after the fact that he tried to serve the Lord and it went well until it didn't go well, until he crumbled under the exhaustion of it all, he must be wondering, is God's angry wrath going to chew me out? Is he upset with me? Or is he just dumb? I mean, God's fearsome to me. But what he heard was God saying, no, listen, I'm not aloof. I'm close. God whispers because he's close. Right? That's how you whisper. You know, if we're in a room full of people, like Sunday afternoon, we were just talking about this between services. Sunday was so chaotic between services. I mean, after the second service, they had a bounce houses in here. This place was so full of people. I met people I didn't know, and still trying to figure out who they were this week and who I didn't even meet and who I didn't get information on. It was a chaotic afternoon. If we're in a room full of people all milling around talking amongst ourselves, and I wanted to say something to the whole crowd, I'd have to raise my voice and yell. If I want or get a microphone on and speak over the crowd. But if I want to just say something to Michelle, if we're all here, I want to say something just to Michelle, and I don't want everyone else to hear, I can whisper if I'm next to her, if I'm close. God whispers because he's close. And so Elijah in this moment is experiencing something that he needed to know desperately. That despite all that has happened, all the good things that he's done for God, and all the ways he feels over it, he came out when he realized that God wasn't some far-off figure, but he was close enough to whisper. And that's what he needed, the personal. What are you doing here, Elijah? Look at verse 14. Elijah, I think the tone is lowered, right? The temperature is down, but Elijah's going to repeat the same story. He says, I have zealously served the Lord God Almighty, but the people of Israel, they've broken your covenant with you. They've torn down your altars. They've killed every one of your prophets. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. Still misinformation there, but in his isolated mind, that's how it was. So God's going to do something special. God says, well, God has done something special. God has been leading Elijah back to health. He's fed him. He's given him some sleep. He's given him some time away, take a trip, a sabbatical, get away from it all. He has shown up and said, I'm right here. And now he's going to do something else that Elijah needs desperately. He's going to give Elijah some work to do. Now, if you're in a spot of being burned out, you're like, work to do? That's the whole problem. I don't need some work to do. That's stupid. And I agree, there's a spot in our journey where we hit a space where maybe we just need a little break. But Elijah's had a break for a month and a half at least. He's got to go back still. So he's away. And there's a spot where you just need that breather, right? We all do. We all need to carve out those spots. And God carved it out for him. But it's not healthy to stay there for any of us. You're going to get a spot where you get so detached that the detachment becomes depressing, or the spiral becomes worse and you're depressed so you don't get up and take care of yourself or your house or your person, and then that makes you feel even worse, which makes you do less to take care of anything, which makes you feel worse and blah, you know. I mean, at some point, the ability to step out of that and say, I gotta have something to do. But here's the thing. Elijah wasn't ready to go back and do the same old thing again. He's over it. So God didn't give him something to do. God gave him something new to do. The Lord told him, he said, go back the same way you came and travel to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive there, anoint Hazael to be the king of Aram. Now, I want to make an observation that some of you might not ever dot together, but for those who do, I'm going to make an observation anyhow. The current king of Aram was Ben-Hadad. And God says, anoint Hazael to replace Ben-Hadad as king of Aram. Now, in another week or so to come, we're going to see Ben-Hadad is still king of Syria or king of Aram. And you're going to be like, wait a minute, I thought, you know. Remember that when people get anointed for a position sometimes, it was a long time until it actually happens. Remember when young David, the shepherd boy, was anointed to be king of Israel? It was many years before he actually became the king. When Jeroboam was told in the field he'd be the king of the north, it was many years. So sometimes things happen and they don't come to fruition until later. But Elijah is told to go anoint Hazael to one day be king of Aram. And then he says, number two, he says, I want you to go and anoint Jehu, grandson of Nimshi, to be king of Israel. Not yet, but later. Two replacements for public figures down the road. And then number three, he says, and anoint Elisha, son of Shaphat, from the town of Abel Meholah, to replace you as my prophet. And this is the key for Elijah. God says, Elijah, you need someone else to mentor. You need someone else to be with you and not walk this alone. Someone who needs you as a mentor, someone that you can look to and pour your life into. And what God is doing is saying, Elijah, you do need to get back to work, but maybe your strengths have shifted. It's an interesting thing, and people, this is a whole conversation you can have with people, coaching people through especially the middle of their life. But oftentimes as we get older, our strengths shift or they need to shift. What you're doing when you're young and you're really good at those things, sometimes they don't always carry, depending on such, what you're doing and what kind of business you're in, it doesn't always carry the same weight, and you've got to, your energy changes, your experience and your wisdom increases. And sometimes what we find is a need to shift the macro view of our purpose and our job and our goal in life, maybe sometimes from building and achieving to sometimes coaching and mentoring others. And God takes Elijah and says, Elijah, you're not done. Elijah's not done yet. He's going to go back to being a prophet. He's going to do some really cool stuff still. But God says, Elijah, you need to be pouring into somebody younger than you who's going to eventually be able to, you need to be ready to hand this thing off. The worst thing we do is we hold everything to ourselves and we get mad when someone tries to step into our space and we don't hand things over. He's, you need to prepare someone else. You need to be a mentor, not just a machine. So you're going to get back to work, but I'm going to give you a new purpose, a new strength. This is going to be for the future, and it's going to be for your good. And then God says this. God says, anyone who escapes from Hazael will be killed by Jehu. Anyone who escapes from Jehu will be killed by Elisha. And yet I will preserve, this is powerful, yet I will preserve 7,000 others in Israel who've never bowed down to Baal or kissed him. Do you know what that verse is saying right there? As Elijah's leaving to do his new calling, his new job, his he needs to get back to work, but in a new, fresh way, God says, oh, by the way, Elijah, you're not the only one. Because Elijah has been saying, I'm the only one. And it's interesting that God never corrected him along the way. Like, he didn't say, hey, you're lying. He let Elijah run with this, you know, I'm the only one left, I'm the only one left. And God just let him go. But at some point before the whole conversation's over, God says, oh, by the way, you're not the only one. Because sometimes we're not ready to hear it when we're saying it. But at some point, a good message for all of us is, don't think that way. Don't isolate yourself that way. You're not as alone as you feel you are. And exhaustion and fear and frustration and weariness can convince you of some bad ideas, but you're not alone. So what does Elijah do? Well, you think Elijah's going to go out there and, you know, do what God told him to do. First of all, anoint Hazael, the next king, then Jehu, the next king, and then thirdly, anoint Elisha to be your protege, right? But Elijah skips the first two steps. He goes straight to Elisha. That's the first thing he does. It says in the verse number 19 that Elijah went and found Elisha, son of Shaphat, plowing in a field. He's like, I need my guy, okay? I need to find the guy I need to raise up to walk with, to replace me. Maybe he just wanted to be done. I don't know. Or maybe he just said, I should not be so isolated anymore. And this is powerful because he left his last servant behind and God says, you need somebody else. You need somebody else. And in the story here, Elijah, it's weird trivia, but you know Elijah never, ever, ever goes to those other two kings and anoints them? Those other two guys God told him to anoint, he never does it. He dies before that happens a few years later. It would be his protege, Elisha, who would go anoint those two kings. Elijah never does it. Elijah lands straight for his replacement and says, I need to mentor you. And he's smart. He's getting back with somebody else. Now here's how the story went. This is our last part of the story, so let me go through it real quick. There were 12 teams of oxen plowing in the field, and Elisha was plowing the 12th team. So I want you to picture this town, Abel Meholah. And there's apparently this big old field outside the town. I don't know if a rich person owned the field or if they shared the field or if the town owned the field, but apparently people, at least some people, owned their own teams of oxen, and they're plowing the field. You know, in other words, Elisha's an owner-operator, just so you know. He's an owner-operator. Those were his oxen. That was his plow. I don't know if everyone out there was an owner-operator or if some people were, the owner of the property owned some of the oxen, but Elisha owned his oxen. He owned his own plow. He's out there making a living in the field. And as he's plowing away, it says that Elijah went over to him, threw his cloak over his shoulders, across his shoulders, and then walked away. Can you imagine how weird that would be? You're just out there plowing the field, and all of a sudden there's this guy walking across the field. Who's that? What's he doing here? And as he gets closer, it's like Elijah. Elijah's pretty famous in Israel at this point. The Bible describes him as a very hairy man, interesting. Very distinct person. Like, is that a prophet of God? Is that Elijah? And he stops the oxen, and all of a sudden here comes Elijah, takes his cloak off, throws it across his shoulders, and just walks away. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, but Elisha knew what that meant. He knew. He was a spiritual. He knew what God was saying. God was saying, come follow me into a new life. So Elisha left the oxen standing there. He ran after Elijah and said, first let me go and kiss my father and mother goodbye, and then I will go with you. Elijah replied, good luck. Go on back. But think about what I've done to you. Hey, I want to go say goodbye to my family. Go ahead. But don't forget what just happened. Don't forget in your farewell, God's calling on your life. And what Elisha does next is pretty eyebrow-raising, but we should look at it. Elisha returned to his oxen and slaughtered them. This is a brutal word, isn't it? Slaughtered them. And he killed them. He used the wood from his plow to build a fire to roast their flesh, and he passed around the meat to the townspeople, and they all ate. He throws his own going-away party. He's like, hey, guys, let's have a big steak party to see me off. Where are you going to get that much steak from? I have the steak. Like, why would he throw himself this big farewell party? And this is so important. He wasn't just having a goodbye party. He was making a statement that says, I'm all in. There's no turning back. Because had he gone back the next day and says, I changed my mind. He don't got a plow left to plow. He used it to make a fire. And if he got a new plow, he has no oxen left. He served them over medium rare or medium well to the town. You know, he's like, he was saying, I am all in, there's no turning back, this is where God is taking me, and I'm in. It's a powerful moment for him. And it says that he went with Elijah as his assistant. That's where we're going to stop the story today. Let me just take a few minutes to just land this plane and just say this to you. What a weird story. Of all the stories about the great Elijah, Elijah's a name that even if you're not even a religious person, you've probably heard the name in religious lore of Elijah. And he's very sacred to some people, especially in Jewish culture. Elijah, the spirit of Elijah, right? All that kind of stuff. And here's Elijah. If you feel like people like that are unreachable to you, if you feel like you can't relate to spiritual giants or amazing people like that, can you relate to this Elijah today? Can you relate to burnout Elijah? Can you relate to I'm over it and I'm sick of it Elijah? I feel like I failed. I'm tired of all the things I've been doing for these years. It doesn't even faze me anymore. I don't think I did a good job. I don't care. I'm too tired to care anymore. I'm alone. I'm isolated. Elijah was totally burnt out. But what he found when he was at his lowest spot was that God was there. And here's what I want to say to you today. Please hear me. I want you to hear this today. God doesn't just have a job for you. He has a heart for you. This is so important. It's easy for us to think, oh, you know, what good am I? And we all want to have purpose. We all want to be something. But more than your accomplishments or how good you are or what you're doing or however society might measure you, your maker, your God, doesn't just have a purpose for you. He has a heart for you. And Elijah needed to see this, didn't he? Because it would have been easy for Elijah along the way to say, you know what? I'm good with God because I'm over here prophesying droughts. I'm praying fire from heaven. I'm doing my job. And so as long as I'm doing my job, God's okay with me. But if I wasn't doing my job, then God wouldn't even know I exist, right? It'd be easy to think that. Or to think I failed. King Ahab and Queen Jezebel, they didn't turn around. I didn't even succeed. Maybe God is disappointed. Or maybe I had a breakdown and I fell apart. And God's just like, well, too bad, so sad, casualties, and moved on. But what Elijah found when he bottomed out was that God didn't just have a job for him. God had a heart for him. that Elijah mattered. Something we say, I say this all the time at Lighthouse here. Many of you have heard me say this before, especially if you serve in any of our facets at Lighthouse. I sometimes will say, you are more important than what you do. You are more important than what you do. In other words, we're thankful for what you do. We really are, because it's a lot to do. But you matter more, that you don't have to, you know, we all go through spots. If you need to recover, you know, take a break, you know, don't run and disappear because you feel bad. No, you're more important than what you do. And if we feel that way, if I feel that way, how much more does God, who is perfect, unlike me, who's a hot mess sometimes, how much more does God look at you and say, hey, you are more important than what you do? God doesn't just have a job for you. He has a heart for you. You matter. And some of you today need to believe that in your core. You personally matter to your Maker. You matter to God. And God has led Elijah through a journey of healing from breakdown. And what did he do? And maybe somewhere in Elijah's process, this is where you need to be today. And maybe you've not even had a big breakdown. It's not that you're having a collapse, a colossal collapse like that. Maybe you're just pushing through low-key burnout, where you keep working through it, but you're just not yourself. You feel like a zombie. You feel like you've lost who you are. You've lost your passion. Look at the steps that God brought Elijah through. He said, you need to get some sleep. Are you sleeping enough, folks? Are you getting enough sleep? I'll bet you a whole bunch of us were honest today, we're not sleeping near enough. Are you getting enough sleep? Are you getting enough food? When you're in a bad spot, maybe sit down and grab a Snickers, you know. Just that's the word of the Lord right there, okay? But maybe you need to eat. Maybe you need to take a nap. Maybe get a little more sleep at night. Maybe you need to get away, take a little break, take a little trip. Just get away. God, not just get away, but God brought Elijah to a spiritual touch point, Mount Sinai. Go to some spot to reconnect with God, to get back to what God did in your life at one time and rekindle that. Maybe you just need to turn all the noise. You don't need a fire and a powerful wind or an earthquake. You need to push all the noise aside and meditate and listen for God's gentle whisper, to let you know he's close. And maybe our inability to push away the noise drowns us out. Our headphones are blaring all the time. We don't stop and listen and realize God is here. And God speaks in the funniest ways, doesn't he? He whispers to us in the funniest ways. Sometimes it's a friend that says the oddest, a friend says something like, whoa, and it hits you just like, I needed that. Or a song lyric you hear, or something you see or witness, or an event that happens, or a thought that pops into your mind to give you clarity through a rough season. It could be coming to on a Sunday and hearing something in a message like this that is exactly what you needed that day. Those are all the dozens of ways that God just somehow taps you on the shoulder and says, I'm here. I'm here. Don't blow that off. Do what Elijah did. Walk towards that. Walk towards those moments when God whispers. And maybe, just maybe, you just need a new job to do. It's time to get busy. Not necessarily the same thing. Maybe you need to shift what you do. Maybe you need to shift your strengths to add something to the direction. Maybe you got to do some of the same things, but you need to take on a new angle, a new path forward. But you need to move forward. That was Elijah's journey back to health, from burnout to rekindling. But what he learned along the way was that God didn't just have a job for him. God had a heart for him, and God has a heart for you too. You are more important than what you do. You matter to God. We'll pick up the story next week, but for today, let's close in prayer.